Not that his staying behind with Bragg's army had done any good, he mused bitterly. The colonel had succumbed to his wounds anyway, dying as he and Corey stood, looking over the hills of southeastern Tennessee. There had been no way to get word of Thompson's death to his wife, Mildred. She and Lucille had fled from Yankee-occupied Vicksburg, heading west across Louisiana toward Texas. The understanding was that Corey and the colonel would join them when they could. But with tens of thousands of Yankees in their way, Corey and Thompson had been forced to go the other direction, to Chattanooga. Then had come the battles, the colonel's death, and the retreat to Dalton. Corey didn't even know if Lucille was still alive. It was that simple and that awful. Abner crouched behind one of the boulders and poked the barrel of his rifle toward the oncoming Federals.
"What'd the lieutenant say?"
he asked as Corey came back to join him. "To give them a warm welcome." Abner spat.
"We'll give them hell, that's what we'll give them."
Corey knelt beside his friend and nodded. He peered across the valley to the west of the ridge. The landscape was thickly wooded, like all the other valleys and ridges in this part of Georgia. But through gaps in the trees he could see movement. From time to time his keen eyes even caught flashes of blue. There was no doubt now. All along the crest of the ridge, men crowded forward, eager to catch a glimpse of the approaching foe. Gunnery crews loaded the heavy cannons that had been hauled up here with much sweating and cursing. Riflemen thumbed fresh percussion caps under their weapons and wiped damp palms on the legs of their trousers. Somewhere, far below the eminence, a bugle blew. Farther on, another bugler took up the call. The tiny notes floated up to the top of Rocky Face Ridge.
"Listen to 'em," Abner said. "Let us know that they're coming, just as bold as brass. They ain't even trying to sneak up on us."
"There's no point in that," Corey said. "An army can't sneak up on anybody. Not one as big as what Sherman's got, anyway."
"Let 'em come. They'll send them damn Yankees packing."
Off to the north, a rattle of gunfire sounded as the Yankees launched an attack on that part of the ridge. Corey was not surprised when he saw a long line of blue-clad infantry emerge from the trees below and start toward the base of the ridge at a fast walk. Their enthusiasm got the best of them, and the Yankees broke into a run. They yelled as they came forward, just like they had at Missionary Ridge. Corey rested the barrel of his rifle on one of the smaller rocks in front of him and aimed down at the charging Yankees. They were still a couple of hundred yards away, and that much lower as well. Shooting accurately would be a tricky proposition, but there were so many of them, Corey thought. All he had to do was squeeze the trigger, and he could be pretty sure of hitting someone in that surging tide of blue. He suddenly asked himself why they were doing this. The Yankees had known that they were charging right into the guns of the Southerners. Did they really think that their enemies would let them just waltz through the gap? Were they that stupid? He had ridden with Forrest, had overheard many discussions of strategy between the general and his subordinates. Colonel Thompson had also discussed tactics with him. Now, as he peered down at the running, shouting Federal troops, Corey realized what was going on. He knew a feint when he saw one. Somewhere the Yankees were up to something. Somewhere, but not here. They were either launching a major assault or getting ready to do so. But this knowledge did Corey no good. There was nothing he could do. No one he could tell who would believe him. The Yankees were right over there, attacking Rocky Face. A blind man would know that, because he didn't have to see them. He could hear them, could hear the rattle of musketry and the roar of artillery, could smell the powder smoke that now began to drift in thin streamers through the air. The sounds and smells of battle were unmistakable. Corey pressed the trigger, felt the heavy kick of the rifle against his shoulder as he fired down into the Yankees. It was all he could do, all any of them could do, as they knelt atop the ridge. Volleys of fire rang out all along the crest. The cannons began to thunder. Down below in the valley, fierce shell bursts flung dirt and debris and pieces of Yankees high in the air. As Corey reloaded, he saw the Federals falling, tumbling forward as Confederate lead ripped through their bodies. Canister and grape shot shredded many of them. They were dying by the dozens, Corey thought, as he leveled his rifle again. He squinted over the barrel, no longer able to see well enough because of the smoke, and pressed the trigger. Little bits of flaming powder stung his right hand as the percussion cap snapped and set off the charge inside the barrel. Corey ignored the sensation. If the Yankees kept this up all day, by evening the back of his hand would be blistered by the powder and covered with scratches from the tiny shards of metal that flung out each time one of the caps exploded. His arms would be black and grimy to the elbows, and his face would be discolored from the smoke as well. His throat and nose would be raw from the acrid stench. That was part of the toll that combat extracted from a man, assuming, of course, that he survived. Some of the Yankees stopped in the middle of their blind charge and dropped to their knees to fire up at the ridge. Corey heard a few rounds whine overhead, and others ricocheted off the rocks where he and Abner crouched. Shooting up at such a steep angle was even more difficult than shooting down, so the Yankees didn't do much damage. Corey wasn't particularly worried about being hit. He reloaded, aimed, squeezed off a shot, then did it all over again, in the sort of routine that was all too familiar to him by now. Over the years, he had been haunted at times by the knowledge that he was taking the lives of his fellow men in battle. But he supposed he was numb to that now. He never even thought about it much anymore. Time had little meaning under these circumstances, but when the Yankees broke off their charge and started to pull back, Corey could tell that they hadn't kept it up for very long. That went right along with what he had figured out earlier about this attack being nothing more than a distraction. The Yankees didn't retreat very far, though. They fell back to the thick stand of trees in the center of the valley and stayed there, showing themselves from time to time so that the Confederates atop the ridge would know they were still there. They were out of rifle range, but the Confederate artillery continued lobbing shells into the trees from time to time. The gunners couldn't keep up a constant barrage because they had a limited supply of powder and shot. That was one of the problems with the war effort. Everything was in short supply now. Abner sat back and grinned in satisfaction.
"Told you we'd lick him," he said. "You see him turn tail and run, Corey?"
"I saw him. I'm not sure we licked him, though."
"What do you mean by that?" Abner asked with a frown. "We're still up here, and they're still down there, ain't they?"
"I think that's where they want to be," Corey said. He scooted back from the edge of the cliff so that he wouldn't present too tempting a target to any Union snipers, then stood up. "I'm going to go talk to the lieutenant again."
"See if you can get me a few more caps when you do," Abner said. "I'm starting to run a mite low."
"I'll see what I can do." Moving in a crouch, Corey loped off across the ridge. Lieutenant Stockard was talking to a captain. Corey didn't know all the officers, despite the months he had spent in this army. He knew he was in a corps commanded by General William J. Hardee. None of that really mattered to him. He was never going to fit in as a soldier. That was one reason he had avoided enlisting for as long as he had. He could fight, and he really didn't mind taking orders. But inside, he chafed at the military discipline, and always would. He supposed he had always chafed at discipline. Maybe that was why he had left the farm back in Virginia and headed west to make his own way in the world. His mother, Abigail especially, had been a stern taskmaster, and he'd had three older brothers who liked to boss him around too. His father had died when Corey was fairly young, but Corey remembered him as the most easygoing member of the family, a man who liked to laugh and had a tendency to dream too much, maybe. Corey had the same problem with dreams that were too big, but he came by it honestly, he supposed. It was part of John Brannan's legacy to him. Corey waited until Stockard was dismissed by the captain. "Lieutenant, can I talk to you?"
"I'm a little busy, Brannan," Stockard said. "In case you haven't noticed, we're in the middle of a battle."
"No, sir," Stockard glared at him.
"You hadn't noticed?"
"No, sir. I mean, it's not a battle, not a real one."
"What the hell is it, then?"
Stockard flung a hand toward the western edge of the ridge, where rifles still barked and cannons blasted from time to time.
"That doesn't sound like a fancy dress ball to me, Private."
"No, sir, it's a real fight." Corey thought about giving up, but he was too stubborn for that. He continued. What I mean is that the Yankees aren't really trying to take Rocky Face. They're just trying to keep us busy. What in the world makes you think that? They've got to know that they can't take this ridge with the small number of men they have out there. Then they broke off their attack too fast. It's a feint, sir, a diversion. They're going to hit us in force somewhere else. For a second, the lieutenant looked as if he were going to dismiss the idea out of hand. But then he frowned and thought, and rubbed at his close-cropped beard. Maybe you've got something there, Private. I know that General Johnston is convinced that the main force of the Yankee Army is going to come at us through Crow Valley, to the north of Dalton. Perhaps Sherman is trying to draw more of our men up here to the ridge so as to weaken the town's defenses. It would make his job a lot easier if Dalton were only lightly defended. I wouldn't know about that, sir, Corey said with a shake of his head. I just know that the attack didn't seem real to me. Men really died, Stockard pointed out. Some are ours, but from what I saw, a great many are theirs. Generals sometimes spend the lives of soldiers like a man throws around coins in a dram shop. Stockard's eyebrows lifted in surprise. That sounds dangerously close to insubordination. I'm going to forget I heard you say that, Private. Yes, sir. Corey's jaw clenched tightly as he spoke. It doesn't matter whether the Yankee attack was a diversion or not. We've been ordered to remain here and hold this ridge, and hold it we shall. Not one Federal soldier shall be allowed to set foot atop the crest. Do you understand, Private Brennan? Yes, sir, Corey said again. Now return to your post and forget those foolish notions. We follow orders. Corey nodded, saluted, and turned to go back to the rocks where Abner waited. He had forgotten to ask about getting more percussion caps, but he didn't want to bother Stockard with that now. The lieutenant was right about one thing. No Federal soldier would reach the crest of Rocky Face, because they didn't want to. But somewhere else, Yankee boots would be trotting on southern soil, and no one would be there to stop them.